Hello, and welcome to Cuban Genealogy Podcast 406, Part 1. It's June 26, 2021. In today's episode, we talk with Richard Dennis about Isleños, Canary Islands, in your family tree. Rich Dennis is a PhD student at FIU and a co-founder of Digital Cuba. And remember to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
So one of the things that we want to do with Digital Cuba is also do things like this, kind of present the history of this genealogy, if you will. I am a PhD candidate at FIU in history, so I love to learn about not only who my ancestors were, but what was the social context around their lives, around their migration from be it Cuba to the US, be it Spain to Cuba. And so that's what I am going to do with this presentation, is I want to look really at the history behind the migration of Canary Islanders to Cuba. Brian, are we on Facebook Live yet?
We are. So thank you, Facebook. Thank you, Facebook Live.
So, Canary Islands is very interesting, and I see we have a lot of you on today, and you probably all have Canarian ancestors. Canary Islands contributed the majority, but certainly the had the larger percentage of immigrants to Cuba and also to places like Puerto Rico as well. So it's important when we look at this, and when we look at this migration to Cuba, which was so significant and substantial, to keep in mind the broader context, right? The Spanish Empire was a very big empire. It had obviously Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, a lot of Canarian migrants went there. Sometimes they shuffled around. Sometimes they went from Dominican Republic, which was Hispaniola back then. They would go from there to Cuba, depending upon whatever was going on in that place, if there was a war going on, if there was a revolt going on. So today I am gonna talk about really mostly Canarian immigration to Cuba, but keep in mind that this migration impacted a lot of other areas as well, including places like Louisiana, where to this day there's a very lively Isleño population. Isleño is what a lot of the Cubans and also a lot of not just Cubans, but a lot of people call those people who are from Canary Islands, right? So we call them Isleño, sometimes we call them Canarios. I'll probably refer them to them mostly as Canarios in this presentation, but they're interchangeable, Isleño, Canario. So I have up right now a map of the Canary Islands just to give us kind of this foundation here. Canary Islands are seven islands, right? There's Tenerife and Gran Canaria. I'm gonna be talking a lot about Tenerife today because Tenerife is key to the migration to Cuba, right? Tenerife, also Gran Canaria, right? We're gonna see some of this, but it really, a lot of it is from Tenerife. Also some from La Palma, the other islands, which were less sparsely populated, like Fuerteventura, Lanzarote, and El Hierro contributed a lot less to this migration. So I'm not gonna be talking about them too much. When Columbus arrived in the New World in 1492, two of these Canary Islands, Tenerife and La Palma, had not yet been conquered, right? So there was this process where Spain was conquering the Canary Islands that begins in the 1400s and isn't really complete yet in 1492. By 1511, we see Spanish attempts to conquer Cuba, right? And Diego de Velázquez, who sets out from Hispaniola. Hispaniola is the first Spanish territory that is colonized. And it's from there that a lot of these expeditions to conquer these other areas like Cuba take place. Between 1511 and 1515, the conquistadors found the Siete Villas, right? So among them are Santiago de Cuba, you have Baracoa, you have Puerto Príncipe, La Habana, Trinidad, right? These are some of the first towns in Cuba. And at this point, men form a disproportionate part of early Cuba's population. And as far as the region from Spain that is most represented at this time, it's actually Andalusia, right? There are some Canarians in there, but it's mostly men from Andalusia, although we see women also starting to arrive. And that's important because that's what's going to distinguish Canarian immigration to a lot of this other Spanish immigration to Cuba. Canarians are going to travel, isleños are going to travel as family units, right? And that was something that the crown really encouraged because it made things a little more stable, right? If men were with women or if men had came with their families, they were more likely to stay in that place. As we're going to see, this becomes a real problem in Havana because once they realize there's not much gold there, the conquistadors are going to start leaving, right? They're going to start leaving to other places like Mexico. You have Hernan Cortez is going to set off from Cuba and go conquer the Aztecs in Mexico. You're going to have Hernando de Soto, who's going to also leave Cuba and go to Florida, right? So Havana is actually like kind of empty, right? By the mid 1500s, right? In fact, the city of Trinidad is basically like a ghost town, right? There's not even a single white person left in Trinidad. The white population, and we have to distinguish this because there were, of course, people in Cuba before the Spanish came. The Taínos, right? The indigenous people who are decimated for a variety of reasons. Obviously, a lot, you know, there was a lot of violence, but most of them actually died of diseases that they did not have immunity for, right? So as you can see, from 100,000 people, and this is all estimated, pre-1510, this dwindles in like 10 years to 22,000. And by 1555, the whole population of the island is only 5,000, right? The white population also starts to decrease, right? To the point where by 1550, there's only 600 to 700 white, obviously mostly Spanish people in Cuba. The encomiendas, which were basically grants of indigenous people, the crown would grant a conquistador a certain amount of indigenous people to labor for him. That system is basically made illegal by the 1550s, right? So a lot of Spanish conquistadors leave also at that time. But one thing that is interesting and that we have to note from the outset is that the Canaries are going to become integral to this conquest very, very early on. In fact, where does Columbus take off from? He takes off from the Canary Islands, right? And between 1492 and 1506, and those are basically the time span of his four voyages, at least 12 expeditions are going to make stops in the Canaries before they go to the New World, right? And so the Canaries are going to have this privilege of doing business with the Americas very early on, right? They're also very importantly, and this is also one thing I'm going to giving you some of the context and some of the reasons as to why the Canaries is going to be so important later on, why we're going to see so many people, so many of our ancestors come from the Canaries, right? Is that the Canary Islands is going to be the exception to this monopoly at the time, there was a monopoly where all trade to the New World had to be done from the port of Seville, right? So say, you know, Cuba could not trade legally with Venezuela, right? Which obviously these were not countries at the time, but they were still being conquered, right? So everything had to go through Seville. There was a monopoly. Later on, Cadiz also joins in. But the exception to this was the Canary Islands, right? And Canarian immigrants were also not subject to the control of the Casa de Contratación, right? All they needed to travel of the ship's captain, right? As per a 1511 royal decree. Another very important factor, and this is something, you know, that we don't think of much because it just doesn't exist anymore, but people who left to go to the New World also needed to provide basically proof that you did not descend ancestry, or that, you know, that you were also that you were not Portuguese. Right. So if your ancestry, let's just say, and I'll put it in quotes, was problematic, you could not leave from Seville, but you could leave from the Canary Islands. Right. So we're going to see a lot of people go from the peninsula. When I say the peninsula, I mean Spain, you know, proper, go to, yes, right. By the late 1500s, we are going to see populations start to increase in Cuba, right? And in fact, we're going to see the Canarian presence is going to be quite significant already, right? It's going to be actually slightly over a quarter of the Spanish immigrants in Havana are going to be Ileño, like from pretty much from the start, right? This is the composition, the origin of the immigrants, the earliest documentation that we have. And this is a great study that was done by Alejandro de la Fuente, which is a professor out of Harvard University. As you can see, Andalusia does have kind of the lion's share of immigrants in this early period, which is 1585 to 1610. But right behind it, right, and certainly a lot of the early conquistadors were from Andalusia. Right behind it is the Canary Islands, right? So 23.6, according to this study, of the immigrants were from the Canary Islands. Again, something that distinguishes this migration is the fact that women are traveling, right? You really don't see this anywhere else. And you don't see this with other Spanish immigrants. In fact, it is mostly the men that travel. Certain places like Mexico and the conquistadors that went to Central America and South America mostly traveled by themselves, right? And they intermarry with the indigenous women. You see that a lot less. Certainly there is some of that early on in Cuba, but with respect to the Canarian immigrants, they travel more as family units, right? In fact, during the latter part of the 1500s, happens. There's actually more Isleñas living in Havana, right? Again, the presence of white women, and I stress white women, was deemed by the crown, by the Spanish crown, as a stabilizing factor that would form good increase the population, and very importantly, usually prevented colonists from going to other parts of the Americas. You know, Cuba was not the early trade, certainly the early trade that's promoted by the isleños in Cuba is going to be the wine trade, right? The wines in Canary Islands were considered some of the best in Europe, particularly from Tenerife and La Palma. And this is significant because when this whole wine trade crashes, we're going to see, where do you think the majority of the Canarian immigrants come from? They're going to come from these two places, in particular Tenerife, right? Where the economy, where there's going to be a missus, right? By the late 1500s, you're also going to see hides, right? And leather are going to become a major export product of Cuba. There is some sugar, right? But there's we really don't see that until much later. And we also aren't going to see tobacco until a little bit later. And tobacco is going to be very important because it's going to be it's going to become very associated with isleños. It's going to be become very associated with the quintessential tobacco farmer, the veguero in Cuba. So by the 1600s, we see that the Canarian economy is going to be in economic crisis, right? One of the things that hurts this is that for a period of about 80 years, Portugal and Spain were together, right? It was kind of like a joint empire. Portugal breaks away in the 1640s, and this is going to hurt the Canarian economy because it's going to lose many of its markets, right? It's going to lose selling its wine to Portuguese colonies, and it's going to especially lose England. England and Portugal have a long time alliance, right? And so it loses England as a trading partner. And so it's going to fall on hard economic times, and especially wine products that are coming out of Tenerife. And so we're going to see, this is one of the reasons that is going to precipitate this migration, particularly from Tenerife, right, in the later 1600s. One of the other factors is going to be population growth, right? The population surges in the island of Tenerife, right? So there's kind of this overpopulation just at the time that there's an economic crisis, right? And so there's going to be this need to have like this escape valve. And then of course, it's overpopulated, but guess what, right? And a lot of other areas, in fact, most of the Americas are not. Florida is not, Louisiana is not, Texas is not. And those are just some of the places where you're going to also see Canarian migration. So one of the interesting things is that in 1678, there's going to be a royal cedula. A cedula is kind of like a royal decree, known as the one from 1678 is known as the blood tribute, el tributo de sangre. And this decree said that for stipulated that for every 100 tons that a ship is transporting to the Americas, they also had to take five Canarian families of five members each. Right. So this was certainly major factor that's going to contribute to this next major wave of families, of Canarian families to, in particular, Cuba. They do go to other ports. There are some that go to Venezuela. There are some that go to Puerto Rico. Some that go to Santo Domingo. But really, Cuba is going to accept most of these Canarian families. Crown, again, is very interested and invested in populating these islands. Cuba, at this point in time, I talked about the fact that the Canarians, you know, sold their wines, hides become important. But by this time, Cuba's importance lies in the fact that it is the kind of a hub where all of the ships that are transporting all the gold and silver from South America have to go through, right? They all stop at the port of Havana, right? And so Havana starts to thrive because of this, not that they're taking the gold, you know, the gold's going to Spain, but they do benefit from this traffic, right? So they, you know, all kinds of other businesses and products and services that come about because you have this massive influx of people. So the crown becomes very invested in populating Cuba. They often would pay for the passages of the families. They would often pay merchants extra for transporting these families. And so this becomes a big business for a lot of Isleño merchants. So you're going to see a major wave of voyages to Cuba in the late 1600s. And this is where a lot of us that have ancestors in Guanabacoa, in places like Santa Maria de Rosario, which is a little later, but particularly Guanabacoa is going to, during this time, is going to receive a lot of Canarian immigrants. Also Matanzas, which I'm going to talk about, I think, on the next slide. So I've noticed before I knew this history, I knew that I had a lot of Isleño ancestors that were coming to Guanabacoa. And so now I know why. Now I know why there was this major surge of Isleños in the late 1600s. And again, all of those ancestors on at least on my end were from Tenerife, right? So I always wondered why they were from Tenerife. Of the 53 voyages, and there's some great work that has been done on really kind of breaking down this migration. And what we'll do is I'm gonna provide all my sources, right? So that you can see these works and these ship logs. So there's a great scholar who published a lot of this information, broke it down and provided the ship logs. And a lot of these ship logs actually list the names. So I found some of my ancestors on the ship logs, right? So of the 53 voyages that sailed from the Canaries to Cuba during this time, only 24 of the voyages brought families, right? About 45%. So that it contained a total of 734 Canarian migrants. 140 families in total emigrated. We have detailed information on 98 of these families, right? So we have pretty detailed information on 515 of these people, right? And then some of the ship logs get really detailed and they tell you the age, they tell you what the physical characteristics of the migrants were, gives you sex. Sometimes you'll have an occupation. It tells you also where they come from, right? What the port is and where they were, where they, what village they came from in usually Tenerife, right? Of the 42 families that we do not have a register for, all of those were from Tenerife, and this is about 215 people. All of these voyages, most of the families again come from Tenerife, which is really the hardest hit economically during this time. And only 9 families do not come from Tenerife, right? And of those 9, 7 come from La Palma. Again, La Palma provided a lot of the wines for that trade. And then 2 actually come from Gran Canaria. We don't see too much Gran Canaria immigration during this time. We're going to see that a little later. And I'm going to talk about that because I also have some more direct, certainly my great-grandfather came during the Cochineal crisis in the 1880s from Gran Canaria, which I'll talk about a little later when I get to that wave, because that was probably the largest wave that Cuba had of Canarian immigrants, and that's in the 1800s. So looking at where this wave of immigrants comes from, about 29% of them came from La Laguna, right? So I actually have some of these. 14% come from Santa Cruz de Tenerife. 13% come from La Orotava. I think I have some of those. I definitely have some from Tacoronte, Garachico. There's also El Sausal, La Matanza, and Buenavista. Again, these ship logs are pretty amazing because of the information that it contains. And Canarian immigrants during this wave are going to wind up mostly in rural areas. You know, they don't, you know, a lot of them, you know, these are not the hacendados that are coming over. These are not the elites that are coming over. These are mostly, I mean, you do have a lot going to the military. You do have some, you know, clerics, religious clerics coming. There are some doctors, right? Some skilled professions, but for the most part, these a lot of these immigrants are agricultural laborers. I know that a lot of my ancestors, from what I can tell, you know, were agricultural laborers. They were they went to the pueblo de campo, right? So they set up shop in places like Santa Maria de Rosario or Bejucal or Santiago de las Vegas, right? Which are going to become major tobacco centers, right? They also are going to be sent to found new towns like Matanzas, right? They're going to end up in places like on the more eastern end of the island, like Morón, Palma Soriano, Candelaria, right? And these immigrants not only bring their agricultural skills with them, but they also bring actual products from the Canary Islands that are going to become popular in Cuba as well, like gofio, right? Have you ever heard of the derogatory term, tú eres un come gofio, right? That comes from it's a derogatory term used to against these leños. These leños also had, in the 19th century, they start to acquire these kind of bad reputations as lazy, as lazy people and bandidos, right? So there's also some of that. Some of it is not justified. Some of it, I'm sure, was true. So they introduce kind of these new products, cheeses, dried fruit, wines into Cuba. And very important is a lot of Cuban products are going to be sent over to the Canaries on ships. And there's going to be a group of merchants over in the Canaries that are going to benefit from this trade. Matanzas is a very interesting case. Matanzas comes about in the late 17th century, right? At a time when Cuba is subject to pirate attacks. And so the crown becomes very interested in creating fortifications, right? So they create one in Matanzas, and they bring over Canary Islanders specifically for the purpose of founding this new city, Matanzas. They bring over in 1684, four families of 36 people. Between 1684 and 1692, 73 families cross over to Havana. They're once in Havana, and these are all families from Tenerife, by the way. So they're all from Tenerife. Once in Havana, they await their settlement. And again, we have great documentation on this. The crown was very good at describing these families. And in 1693, a decree orders that these families come from, these families go from Havana to Matanzas, right? Some of them do not want to go, right? But they're finally able to find, Crown is finally able to find 30 families from this larger pool in Havana, and they go to Matanzas, and they formally found the city in October of 1693. This is some of the information on these founding families. This is, again, available. We can make this available. It's a very detailed. I strongly suspect that Miguel Alfonso de Armas is one of my ancestors, although I don't know if this is my direct ancestor. Maybe you have some ancestors who helped found the city of Matanzas. So in the 1700s, the tobacco industry starts to take off, right? Tobacco brought over from the Canaries becomes the main export of the island's economy, and Canarians become very much associated with tobacco, right? They are known as the quintessential veguero. A veguero is a tobacco farmer, basically, right? And one of the important things in which Canarians are a pioneer in this time period is that they actually are the first to rebel against the Spanish crown, right? In 1717, tobacco farmers start to rebel against the Estanco. The Estanco is basically a monopoly that the state has, whereby farmers have to sell all of their tobacco to the state at a fixed price. And then the state goes ahead and sells it at a much higher price, right? So the tobacco farmers got tired of this, and in 1717 had their first riot. They kind of riot on and off for 6 years. And finally, in 1723, in I think it's Jesús del Monte, right? Jesús del Monte, you know, and unfortunately, I'm not going to be able, there's so much that I'm going to have to leave out. I think we could probably do two or three or four Zoom sessions on Isleños. Jesús del Monte is a town that's has a lot of Isleños. I'm not going to too much about it. But this kind of last in 1723 took place near Jesús del Monte. The military is going to come in finally and is going to execute 11 of these tobacco farmers. They're going to hang their bodies on trees as a way of warning other people against doing something like this. And over 50 of these vegueros are just going to vanish, right? So we have no record of what happened to them. So the crown is going to retain its monopoly on tobacco, right? As all this is going on, we have Canarian families being sent everywhere, right? We have families that are sent to found San Antonio in Texas. Right, many later end up in Cuba because they were not happy in Texas. A lot of the land was not very hospitable to them. Right, they also find that they have more opportunities in tobacco farming in Cuba. So a lot of them actually leave San Antonio to go to Cuba. In 1732, they just the year right after San Antonio, 30 Canarian families are going to found Santa Maria del Rosario. In 1730, the town is going to grow fairly quick, right? Just in the next year, you're going to have now 70 families. So it's going to double. There's going to be 400 people live there. And this new town is going to become a big tobacco center. You're also going to see a lot of subsistence agriculture, right? And in 20 years, you're going to see almost 1,800 people live there, 55 houses. The church is built at this time. This church is considered one of the finest colonial churches in Cuba. If you're ever in Cuba in this area, I certainly encourage you to go see it. It is a beautiful church. It has some Baroque treasures inside of it. There's also a painting by, and I can't remember his name, but an artist that is considered really the first criollo, the first kind of distinctly Cuban artist who felt he was Cuban, did not feel he was Spanish. This is from the 1700s, and some of his artistic work is in this church. So in 1740, the whole Estanco, right, that whole monopoly that the state has is going to kind of be redirected and restructured. You have a lot of restructuring in the Spanish state at this time, right? This is the time where you have a new dynasty, the Bourbon dynasty in Spain. They kind of try to centralize everything, right? Kind of to attempt to control everything. And you're going to see the crown is going to create this company to redirect the tobacco trade again back to the crown to try to cut down on contraband because there's a lot of contraband at this time. One of the interesting things about this company is that it obligated two ships a year to carry 50 Canarian families from Cuba who were already in Cuba to Florida, which was very sparsely populated at that time, right? So you're going to see this kind of migration of Canarian families, not just from Isla Canaria to Cuba or to Puerto Rico, whatever, but kind of from island to other island to other place. Basically, wherever the crown felt it needed to have people and it needed to have people to cultivate land, it would send Canarian families. Santiago de Las Vegas is another town that was established by Canarian families. They began to settle there in the late 1600s. You're gonna see the growth again of the tobacco farms. In 1744, they are already kind of a large community of Isleños, and Santiago de Las Vegas is incorporated into a town. Also, the town of Bejucal is another one that has a very strong Canarian presence. After the Seven Years' War, Spain, who loses, and loses Cuba because, or loses Havana. Havana is actually occupied by the British, and Spain's freaking out. So they'll do whatever it takes to get it back. And they say, I'll give you Florida, right? So they actually trade Florida for Cuba. And this is gonna send a lot of the people who are living in Florida, a lot of Canarian families are actually gonna go to Cuba, right? And there's gonna be a whole town that is created really to kind of house a lot of these people that are coming, a lot of these families that are coming from Florida who have had to flee Florida. And that town is Ceiba Mocha, right? So Ceiba Mocha is really kind of created for the purpose of settling these, I guess you can call them refugees in a way, even though it's kind of the same political entity in a way. In 1765, right? So one of the interesting things about the British occupation of Havana, right? And the British were only in there for about a year, right? But they do a lot of interesting things. And one of those is that they establish free trade, right? So Cuba no longer has to deal with the monopoly in Seville, right? So the crown in 1765 kind of sees the writing on the wall and they decree free trade. This is going to hurt the Canarian economy, right? Because now the crown, Cuba can trade with anybody, right? Economic crisis in the Canaries is also going to be exacerbated by the fact that there are all these wars going on, right? So it's going to be hard for the Canaries to engage in trade at this time. Also, the slave trade is opened up in 1789. And so you're gonna see really sugar plantations are going to begin to overrun tobacco farms, right? So they're literally gonna swallow these tobacco farms up. Tobaccos, these vegueros are gonna have to find work in other places of the island. They're gonna establish tobacco farms in Pinar del Río. So Pinar del Río is gonna become obviously a big tobacco center. They're also going to go to the central part of the island. They're going to go to places like Gabaywang. They're going to go to places like Placetas, which I wanted to talk more about. I'm not going to have a lot of time, but just keep in mind that Canarians are really pivotal in founding and in the history of a lot of these towns in Cuba. So in 1817, there's going to be a major effort by the Spanish crown to increase its white population. And why does it want to do that? One of the reasons, one of the big reasons, is because over in neighboring Hispaniola, right, the island of Hispaniola comprises what is today the Dominican Republic and Haiti. And so there's this big slave rebellion in Haiti that is going to be successful. In fact, it's the only successful slave rebellion to this day in world history, right? And this is going to scare the pants off of Cuba, right? It's going to really, really scare Spain because they fear that something very similar can happen in a place like Cuba, which is becoming slowly but surely a slave society, right? And so they see, you know, it's kind of like a catch-22. The slave population is increasing, which is adding to the prosperity that the sugar industry brings, right? But at the same time, it can also quickly escalate into a rebellion and make things very unstable. And so one of the things that the crown is going to do at this time is to really encourage white immigration. right? Towns like Guines during this time are going to receive Canarian immigrants who are going to participate. So Canarians also participated very heavily in the sugar industry, but they're not really like the large plantation owners. They're really more kind of like the middlemen. They're kind of like provide a lot of the technical skills that are needed in the sugar industry. Keep in mind that the Canary Islands is really how the New World acquired a lot of its knowledge about the sugar industry, because sugar was a big part of that economy before the conquest even, right? So the Portuguese in Brazil had knowledge from the sugar industry that was important in their islands, like the Azores and Madeira. And Spain gets a lot of its knowledge from the Canary Islands, right? So Canarian immigration starts to increase at this time. The slave population also increases, but Canarian immigrants are used at this time to populate areas that are underpopulated, right? So they don't throw the Canarian immigrants right into the whole kind of sugar industrial complex. They actually put them in other areas that they need to populate. You're also going to see the rise in Canarian immigrants who are fleeing Santo Domingo. Why are they fleeing Santo Domingo and going to Cuba? They're fleeing Santo Domingo because Haiti, which is now the Republic of Haiti, actually occupies the Dominican Republic for like 22 years, right? So a lot of Canarian immigrants, particularly from Montecristi, will flee Santo Domingo and settle kind of more in the eastern part of Cuba. Another thing is that independent movements in the 1820s, right? So most of Spanish America becomes independent by like 1823, 1824. This is going to hurt the Spanish economy, right? Because obviously it's going to lose these colonies, and that's going to intensify Canarian immigration into Cuba and Puerto Rico, right? Between 1835 and 1850, you're going to see 15,700 Canarians immigrate to Cuba, right? And then in the last half of the 1800s, you're going to see 50 to 60,000 are going to go to Cuba. The cochineal crisis is going to hit starting in the late 1870s. Cochineal is kind of a red dye that is used to color things. And you're going to see the rise of synthetic dyes in the international market, and it's going to kill the whole cochineal industry, which a place like Gran Canaria in particularly was dependent on in some ways, right? So it's at this time that Gran Canaria is going to send immigrants over, a lot of immigrants over to Cuba. This is where my ancestors come from, right? So they arrived from San Mateo in Gran Canaria in the early 1880s to Matanzas. So slavery is abolished in 1886, right? The Spanish government now continues to encourage, and I say Spanish government because Cuba is still run by Spain. It's not a republic yet, right? So the Spanish colonial government is going to encourage the massive importation of Spanish immigrants because they need these hands. They need laborers, right? Especially for the sugar plantations. And so again, Canarians are kind of deemed more suitable for this kind of work than than people from other places in Spain. So you're going to see a lot of Canarians come over as contract laborers during this time. A lot of them are kind of swindled in their contracts. And so you're going to see the first Canarian Association in 1872 is formed really to kind of lobby for the interests of these Canarian contract laborers. Associations, which I'm not going to get into, but they are very important in Cuba, right? So there's a lot of different Spanish associations in Cuba. They still have the Asociación Canaria. I think they call it Leonor, Jose Martí's mom, Pérez Cabrera, maybe that's her name. So they still have that Asociación Canaria in Cuba. They have El Centro Asturiano. They have El Centro Gallego, right? So each Spanish region has their own association in Cuba still to this day, right? An important thing to note is the cost of transport is going to be reduced, right? So you're going to see this is also going to encourage a lot of people to come, right? You see the price of the ticket starts to go down, right? Also, this is when migration from Isla Canarias increases. Another thing to note, I talked about the Veguero Rebellion and how important the Canarios were in that really early, probably what's the first rebellion against the Spanish crown in Cuba. And they're gonna be something that's not talked about a lot, but Cuba had had like three wars against Spain, the Cubans did to get their independence, right? Starting in 1868 with the 10 Years' War, and then ending finally with the War of Cuban Independence in 1895, 1898. You would think, okay, Isleños, they're Spanish, they're gonna be automatically in the Spanish army, but that was not the case. Obviously some were, but a lot of them actually felt more connected to Cubans. It could be because a lot of them, you know, were more like the agricultural laborers. They felt more in affinity with Cubans. And so a lot of them actually joined the Mambises. They joined the Cuban rebel army in both of those wars. In 1898, Spain is defeated, right? The US comes in and basically helps, however you want to think about it, helps Cuba defeat Spain. I mean, Cuba was kind of already defeating them, but they come in and kind of give them the coup de grace. And one of the things, so they occupy, they don't turn Cuba over to the Cubans right away, right? US occupies it, the island militarily for 4 years. And during this time, they actually revitalize and they modernize the sugar industry, right? Another thing that happens during this time, so obviously you're gonna need labor for this. Another thing that happens at this time is the reconcentración, which during the war, reconcentration was an effort by the Spanish, the general who was the general of the Spanish army, who was trying to defeat the Cubans, he was trying to defeat los Mambises. He instituted this policy whereby all of the rural, if you lived in a rural area, you were reconcentrated into the cities, which were protected by the Spanish army, right? So basically they were put in concentration camps, right? And this is something that is, you don't see as much in history. I mean, a lot of us know about it, but they were probably the first concentration camps, one of the first that I know of for sure in history, right? And a lot of people, you figure Cuba's population at the time, I don't know off the top of my head what it was, but it wasn't, it wasn't a whole lot more than that. And so this is really significant. So you have the loss of a lot of Cubans during this time. They mostly died of disease, right? Obviously, again, I'm sure a lot died from violence, but a lot of them died from disease. A lot of them died from hunger in these camps, right? So you have kind of this depopulation. So that combined with the fact that now you have this modern sugar industry, there is this demand for cheap labor. And so what you're gonna see is something that we really haven't seen too much with Canarian migration is you're gonna see, start to see more single men come, right? To be this cheap labor. But cheap labor with the hope of, saving some money, buying a house, getting married, right? Perhaps having a place to go back to in Canarias, right? So some social mobility as well. So at this time, and this is again, is very different from what we've seen with Canarians before where they travel as family units, only 8% of these men travel with their wives during this time, right? So again, it's the promise of these better wages. And this is actually when my my grandfather came, right? Very young, they were only making 1.5 pesetas a day in Canarias. You could make 25 to 27 pesetas as a colono in Cuba. You could make even more as a tobacco farmer. So that's crazy, right? The cost of living was higher in Cuba, right? And you see a rise in inflation in the 19 teens. And this actually has the effect of providing an incentive for these laborers. You save your money in Cuba and then you spend it in Canarias, right? So this is kind of a new phenomenon that we're seeing. Canarian immigration into Cuba intensifies again after 1910, and it hits its peak when Canarian exports suffer as a result of World War I, right? So you see really most of Canarian immigrants coming between 1915 and 1920. I should note that there's also a lot of Galician immigrants that come from Galicia that come during this time. And the highest peak of this wave is 1919, 1920. You have in Cuba at this time what is known as the La Lanza de los Millones, right? Cuba is like this money flowing everywhere. Price of sugar skyrocketed, right? Because Europe is obviously, the European economy is obviously disrupted. And so this is really the peak of Cuba's economy. So it's a very, very attractive place for a lot of immigrants like the Isleños. And so obviously the price of sugar does fall quite precipitously, actually, in the early 1920s. And then you have kind of what's known as la vaca flacas, right? The skinny cows. But then it kind of recuperates somewhat. So you kind of have this kind of wax and wane of sugar prices and prosperity in Cuba. But by 1929, with the stock market crash and the Great Depression, that kind of ends the mass migration, I should say, of Canarios to Cuba. And Isleños actually start to kind of look more to places like Venezuela after this. You're going to see a lot of Canarian migration to Venezuela. But I can't overstate how significant this group was to Cuba in so many ways that I haven't, you know, I'm not able to cover, but our language, the way we speak, we can attribute to the way we speak Spanish. We can attribute a lot to how the Isleños speak. In fact, if you go to Isla Canarias, you'll notice they speak very similar to us, right? We use a lot of their words, like guagua, guagua, the bus. They don't say bus, they say guagua, right? And we get that from them. A lot of our food, so they also have, they use mojo a lot. And just a lot of our customs come from the Canary Islands. So that ends my presentation. Again, we're gonna post a lot of my sources. I think the ship logs are really interesting. And I'd like to know if you guys have any questions or, you know, anything that you know that you wanna share about your ancestors or their history. Brian, are you there?
I'm here. So if you want to raise your hand, I have a few questions and maybe some of those questions will help other people. So what's your experience?
Well, one more thing I want to say, because again, I couldn't get into all of it. I would have gone on for hours and I don't want to do that, but Gawaiwang is really important. It's a town in the center of Cuba and it actually has a museum about Canary Island immigrants. So just important to keep that in mind.